everyone. We have human trafficking survivor and advocate Bettina Hauser joining us today. How are you doing today, Bettina?
I'm doing wonderful. Hi.
Awesome. So Bettina is going to discuss cause and recovery of victims. But first, Bettina, do you mind sharing with us how you went from being a victim to becoming a survivor, then advocate?
Yes, of course. So I think that the main difference between a victim and a survivor is really about mentality. And mm-hmm. then during my career, the most time, like how I meet people, some people don't like to be called victims and some people don't like to be called survivors. I think it's personal preference. But I think we all can agree on that when a person has a victim mentality, then they feel like that everything happens to them and against them, and that's mostly other people's fault. Now, when it comes to human trafficking, that it's a lot what a person goes through, and I think that's easy to understand for everyone. I think a person is switching to being from a victim to survivor when they start seeing that what were they responsible in the situation, or how can they take the whole situation or the circumstances and then turn it into their advantage. So in other words, when I just stop blaming every other people, they're like, oh, wow, but he did this to me and then she did that to me. And then look into myself, they're like, well, yeah, there were things where I did wrong too along the lines. And how can I change that? Or how did this make mm-hmm. me a stronger person? I think this is the most important step in a recovery process. And as for advocating, I also think that this is just, it's important to talk about, but important to talk about it in a proactive way. So instead of just drowning in something that, like, what happened to who, talk about it, that how can we find a solution? And I think that's really where the work is being done.
Okay. Well, Bettina, I think you have a really, really great perspective, a really great outlook as far as not wanting to be labeled as a victim, and that you take responsibility for being in whatever situation and saying, what can I do to make my situation better? How can I get out of this instead of saying?
I think being a victim is easy. And you know, that's really easy because I can just sit in my chair and point fingers that this did that did that, that person sold me, that person took my money. And it's all true. It doesn't make it any less worse. But I have to look at myself and I have to see how I'm changing my environment.
Good. That's an excellent point. What ways have being an advocate played? Like, what part of that played a part in your healing?
I think healing is a journey, and I don't. It's a very good question, and I think it's also very complex in a sense of your healing journey is really for the rest of your life, and there are a lot of phases to go through. So again, every single one of us has some baggages, you know, like some people might mm-hmm. went through human trafficking and some other people had heavy addictions, you know, and none of them were easy. So this is just evolving as a person. I'm always all about supporting other people and helping them. And I know that I think I grew through of these experiences pretty well by now, and I would like to see another process or something similar with other victims who I'm working with.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me a lot of energy to see other people doing better and then growing out for their environment, but was clearly not very beneficial for them.
Right. How long have you been advocating?
I founded my company a little bit over a year ago. It's still in a startup phase, but it's beautiful and I enjoy it very much. I came to the country in 2012 and was trafficked up until 2016. So that's where most of my experiences come from. And just like a little background, when I got my residency, then I went back to school And then I started to rebuild everything else, which is by now it's like 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. You're a really strong woman, and I commend you, Comfort. You're welcome. And I'm sure that you have so far encouraged and inspired so many others that have been in your position. And I'm excited for the work that you're going to do with your foundation and your organization. What were you going to say?
Yes. I think it's important to be there, you know, and show examples to other people that who can you become. And just because you were down at one point, then you can become better and rebuild a life.
Mm-hmm. And even build other people up and bring them along with you.
Yeah, so I actually been connected with a lot of people in other states, like from New York, Indiana, down here in Florida. And it's nice to see how we can connect with each other, and then we can have each other go through, and I have weak moments too, and they do too. So when we can just connect and talk about it, and then say that, hey, you know, I'm not feeling well, or I'm having anxiety, and then there is a person who can be there, and they're like, you know what, it happened to me, and it's okay, it's gonna get better. That's where most of the help really comes from.
Good. I'm happy that you all have each other as a support system, because you all are the best people to have that support system, because you know what it's like. You know what each other have gone through.
Yes, exactly. And then also, I had to go through therapy too. It was required for me by the government. And that was also a very big help for me in my recovery journey, because there are a lot of techniques and there are a lot of systems in our brain what's acting in a different way. So it's important to understand this process and know when we are not feeling well, and have other people helping how to get better, or just to tell you that it's okay. Like, there are gonna be worse and better days, and this is normal.
Right. And Bettina, I know that there are illegal immigrants that become human trafficking victims. What legal resources are available to people in this situation, illegal immigrants, as far as human trafficking?
So actually, most of the safe houses who I work with, most human trafficking victims are from the States, but there are some who are illegal immigrants, and I was one of them. And in fact, I had absolutely no idea at the time that I would have an option to apply for residency. But for all illegal immigrants, I'm very strongly advising them to reach out to an attorney, because they can apply for asylum and they can get residency in the country, which is the biggest part, because reaching out to law enforcement and any government organization, it's a very different language when someone is like when their immigration status is cleared, and that's where really everything begins. Because a human trafficking victim, the reason why they are there, because they can't support themselves financially, and they won't be able to find work until they can legally work in the country. So this is a very important step at the very beginning.
Okay. Wow. Well, I'm happy that there are resources out there for illegal immigrants as well as for American citizens in the situation.
Yes.
What? Were you going to say anything?
No, I was just agreeing with you.
Okay. What steps do survivors, well, first of all, I know you said that some people don't like to be labeled as victims or survivors. Is there a term that I should use as opposed to saying victim or survivor?
So, you know, I just use both of the words for this reason. I like to call them more survivors, but I know I call them victims and survivors. But I do know who you're referring to.
Okay. Okay. So what steps do survivors need to take to get out of their situation, like to get out of their environment?
Yeah, so this goes back a little bit to the other question, you know, that first of all, most of the human trafficking victims, they think that the environment what they are living in, that's the normal for them. And because they don't see anything else, they see mm-hmm. other victims around them, they see other perpetrators around them, and that's the normal behavior. So they not necessarily see that like something is wrong. So the only way to get out is really to change the environment completely. I mean, when I was trafficked at the end, I ran away. I just took my phone and that bag of clothes what I had and I just ran away. And I didn't even know how big step that was in a recovery journey, because I had to cut ties literally with everyone who was around me at the time, because the girls were just gonna pull me back in what I'm trying to get out from, and so are uh-huh. other people who are supervising. So that's very important.
Good for you.
Thank you. These are hard. Awesome. These are very hard decisions to make, because
you're scared.
As a human beings, we want to be connected and we want to be surrounded with people, and there are persons who we start connecting to when we are there around them, but none of them is good because they are okay with an environment, and we need to change the environment as it is.
Right. So how can we, the public, possibly identify human trafficking victim, someone who may not be as brave as you, someone who's a human trafficking victim, but they're afraid of their captors, they're afraid to leave. How can we possibly identify someone like that so that we can help them get out of the situation?
One of the biggest or easiest way to see that victims, current victims, they are avoiding all kinds of eye contact. They're not being direct. Most of the time, other people is speaking from themselves. So it's like, you know, when you're asking a question to someone and that it's going to be someone else answering the question all the time, and they cannot really say where they are living, what are they doing for work. They're never going to make an appointment. They're not going to confirm anything. Because they're not the one who are handling their own time. It's someone else making the decision for them. So these are like very hurt people, and they won't be ill. The best way to really identify it by asking simple questions like, where does someone live, what they do for living, but not in like a harmful way, or not like in a way when we are right. trying to get into someone's business, you know, just like friendly, right. like, hey, are you doing okay? Is there anything what I can do for you? And most of the time, you will see on their reaction that, yes, there's something what should be done.
Okay, that makes sense. Because they're very timid, and they're probably intimidated by the person that they're with who's running the whole show.
Yes, exactly. And also, most of the time, these people are actually being watched. Like, I remember that, like, when I had to, for example, open a bank account, right? I walked into the bank mm-hmm. alone, but I knew that the person was watching me from the car, from outside, and I exactly knew what I had to say. Like, it wasn't true, but they told me in advance that, okay, well, this and this and this and this is what you have to tell to the teller. And then when they ask you this question, then this is the answer, what you're going to say. So I was being told what to say, and I didn't even, my personality was not in at the bank when I was opening the bank account. I was just reading the script almost.
Yeah, like a robot.
Yes, exactly, because they would tell yeah. me, like, sentences what traffickers would use is that they are the one who are protecting us. They are the one who are really here for us. It's not true, obviously, but the person who is actively being there in the situation doesn't know. I was so scared to reach out to law enforcement at the time, because I'm from Eastern Europe, and I was so convinced that just cops just don't like Eastern Europeans, because that's what I've been told. Mm-hmm. So then the first time when I actually talked to a cop, and then he was a person, right? Like, that is no thing, like, they don't like this nation or that. Like, for them, you are a person, and they want to have.
Right. And he was responsive to what you said to him?
Say it again. I'm sorry. It was breaking down.
That's okay. And that the police officer who you had that conversation with, he was responsive to whatever it was you said to him. He believed you and he wanted to help you.
Correct. And that was also the other thing, you know, that, like, what I've been told by the traffickers is to not to talk to cops, because they're not going to believe me. They will think that I'm the part of the organization, and then I'm the one they just going to try to put me as I'm being the criminal, and all the way down. And then I'm going to get deported. Like, the versions what I got during the years, it was just crazy and crazy. And then when I actually talked to a cop, and then he was like, yeah, that's just not how this looks like. Like, now thinking back, I know that like, it just wasn't even realistic what I was thinking, but I didn't know better at the time.
Right. They brainwashed you because they wanted to keep you under their control.
Exactly. And then there were, like, very strict instructions, even for ways how I should use my phone, things what I can talk about on the phone, how to send messages, and all kinds of stuff. So there is a lot of control on victims.
Wow. So if we see a victim, if we identify a possible human trafficking victim, what can we do? What part can we play to recover that survivor?
It's obvious. It's gonna depend on how severe the case is. If it's bad, and it's really bad and harmful, then just call 911. Don't get involved, because it's just not the best way. But if it's someone who you suspect that it might gonna be a victim, or you're not really sure, you just don't know, but you would like to have and find out, then. The best way, I think, is just asking friendly questions. And then, again, like, with victims, the way how I like to think about it is, like, you know, when you have a cute puppy who is being fed normally and slept and cuddled with its owner, and then it's a friendly right. one, and then there are animals mm-hmm. who are being tortured, right? You can't go to the right. two animal in the same way. Like, with the second one, you have to be a whole lot more careful. So when you take a person from a healthy environment who they've been loved, that's going to react to questions different way than someone who is being emotionally or physically tortured. And this is something what we have to keep in mind. So we can run to a person and then say, hey, are you a victim of human trafficking? You know, I'm here to help you. It's not going to work. But you can go there mm-hmm. and then just ask that, hey, do you need a point of help? Hey, can I give you my phone number? If you need anything, just call me. Whenever you're ready or you just want to talk, I'm here for you. And this helps a lot more, because even if it's not going to happen on that day, then at least the person will have a point of contact to know who to ask for help when mm-hmm. he or she is ready.
Good. That makes sense. Who is most at risk for human trafficking from your point of view?
So, by the stats, 70% of the victims is actually a woman, and it's like I believe it's 50% or close to 50 who are actually children. And then here we have to think about, obviously, the most vulnerable gender and age, because teenagers are so easily convincible, and usually teenagers or kids, they just don't really have the common sense or, like, the level of street smart, I'm not even sure how to say it, to see or to sense when something is not right. Like, when you are in your 30s, 40s, you know, and someone goes there to you with the opportunity of your life, then you see the red flag. that something, it doesn't sound right. Now, teenagers don't have this, so they are very vulnerable. And the same thing applies to women, because we are easily, we are more emotional in this way. I think that, that male gender, or at least the majority of us, because when someone is trying to play on our emotions, we can get involved so much easier. And what's crazy today, that while traffickers used to be men 10 years ago, today it's like almost 90% of them is women. So if there is a woman, goes to a woman on the street saying something, anything, I'm not going to suspect trouble as much as if it would be a male, because we've been taught as kids that, oh, watch out for the guy on the corner, but we never been mm-hmm. taught that watch out for the lady on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Because when you meet a lady in a grocery store, you know, it's not going to cross your mind that maybe she has an agenda, but maybe she does.
That's a good point you made. And speaking of that, because I was, for years, I was one of those ignorant people who not only thought that human trafficking was an international thing, was an international situation, I always related it to men only, up until the story broke with J.C. Dugard, if you remember her.
Yeah.
So when I heard her story, that's what made me sit up and start paying attention more, because a woman played a part in her being, in J.C., being kidnapped and held all these years. The woman was the one who coaxed JC to come into the vehicle.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't the man. Even though he was driving the vehicle, it was the woman who made her feel comfortable and, you know, let her get in the vehicle with them.
And, you know, most of the time, the thing what I see with these organizations is that the main person who operates the organization, it's usually a guy, but the ladies are the ones who are going out and getting the new people, new recruits in the system, because we just don't even think about that wow, this woman wants something and this is not right. If she says so, you know, she's a mom. And again, just like as I'm telling this to you, right, like both of us is a woman, you know, in between us, you know, that there is a connection in between, that if she says something, you know, I'm going to take it better. Like, she's a mom, she's a sister, she's a wife, she, you know, why would I do this to another woman?
Right. Or even a child, a helpless child,
someone
who's innocent and don't know any better. A child on her way to
school. That's the most mind-blowing thing ever. Like, as a woman, if you have kids, like, how can you do this to someone else's child?
Right. At that point, that's when I started paying more attention, because I didn't realize that this was happening right in our back door. And she was held captive for, I think, 18 years.
Oh, wow.
Right in the state of California, right here in California.
Wow.
And so when I saw her story, like I said, a couple of things happened. I at that point, I realized that not only is this not what I thought it was, not only is it not something that's happening internationally only, or mostly internationally, it's happening right here on U.S. soil. But also, it's not only men who's snatching women off the streets, snatching them into a van. They have women helping them, and they have women playing nice to other women and playing nice to little girls to gain access to these women and girls. So I just think it's sad, and I started trying to educate myself more on it, because it was just heartbreaking that this child lost her childhood. And she could have been saved so many times over those 18 years.
So many times, you know, like these things are happening really in the next door, and we fail to realize that. And signs like when we see a lot of people in and out, or like there are signs who this is like the organizations who I was with, there were like probably 10 girls in an apartment. And I think that the neighbors should have seen that it's no way in a million years that 10 girls should be living in a 2-bedroom apartment. And then they are like always in and out, you know, like something should be suspicious that this amount of people doesn't fit in that size of apartment. And not even only that, like when you see them living like this, dressed up like that, like that's a reflex. We should see that.
And a red light should go off.
Right, right.
It should make us notice something and feel like what is going on, what is happening. I know a lot of people are afraid of getting involved in certain situations, but to know that there are women and girls who's being held captive and who has been brainwashed into thinking one thing, so they're afraid to leave, but they want to leave, they want to be rescued, they want to be free.
Everyone wants
just
to be free. This is your basic right.
Right. Right. And knowing that, as a community, as the public, knowing this and knowing your story and knowing Jason Duggar's story, even if we are afraid to get involved, that should prompt us and make us want to help.
Exactly. And in exact these situations, you know, if we just give a phone number or just ask a question, if there is any way how I can help, those people has the opportunity to talk to us when they want to. So instead of us just like interrupting something and then just going in with another force, that is a point how we can help to victims.
There is. And again, Bettina, I think you are so brave, and I think you're very inspirational. And I see in the future, in the near future, you're doing really great things with your foundation.
Thank you so much.
And helping so many other women and children. And I want to thank you so much for taking time out to talk to me today. I really enjoyed our conversation and just you educating us on recovery and causes.
Thank you so much for the invitation, and it was so nice talking to you.
You're welcome. And how can we all follow you and support you?
Yes, so on Instagram it's just Bettina, and the website is also www.justbettinawith2t's.com.
Okay. Thanks again, Bettina, and good luck on everything.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.